The Trump administration upped the pressure on Iran this week, saying to countries that have been buying oil from Iran that they will from now on be penalized by the U.S. for doing so. Iran, in turn, labeled the U.S. military as terrorists. Well, one American who's had a front row seat to the tensions between the U.S. and Iran is Washington Post journalist Jason Rezaian, who spent 544 days in an Iranian prison on espionage charges. He was released a little over 3 years ago and has written a book about his experience called Prisoner. I spoke with Rezaian earlier this week at an event at the John F. Kennedy Library in Boston.
So, Jason, you have been out of prison for a little more than 3 years now. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well. There are still aspects of life and freedom that take some getting used to. Bright lights, lots of sounds, crowded places. But, you know, by and large, freedom is way better than prison.
You spent a lot of time in solitary confinement when you were in prison.
Yeah, freedom's definitely better than solitary confinement. Yeah, I spent 7 weeks at the beginning of my imprisonment in solitary. My wife and I were arrested from our homes at gunpoint, taken to Evin prison, blindfolded, handcuffed, separated, thrown into solitary. I had no news about her for the first 35 days that we were there. And solitary is designed to really make you go crazy. And it works.
One of the things you write in your book is that you realized very quickly when you were imprisoned that you wanted to have kids.
Yeah, you know, prison cells, and I would say specifically solitary confinement cells, are like a coffin. You are very much physically alive, but constrained. I was in a cell that was 4.5 by 8.5 feet wide. The only times I was let out was for interrogation. And so in a confined space like that, you think about your mortality and what you miss and things that you might want to do in your future. And when we first encountered each other after 5 weeks, that was the first thing she said to me. And I said, me too. You know, I really want to have a kid. So we're trying in earnest. You know?
What were you told about why you were in prison?
On the first night, I was told that I was the station chief of the Tehran CIA office and that they had plenty of proof to back it up. I'd been working as a journalist in Iran for 5 years at that point with full state permission. The week before, I'd been in Vienna covering the latest round of the nuclear negotiations between Iran and world powers. I was doing my job in the most above board and transparent way that you can imagine. So they started hurling all of these allegations that I was spying and was the architect of the sanctions regime against Iran. None of these arguments held any water, but I learned very quickly it didn't matter. The bottom line is, if you end up in prison and then put on trial and you don't have a lawyer and the court that you're in has the word revolutionary in its name, the odds of getting a fair trial are pretty slim.
Well, actually, it made me wonder why they even bother with the trial when it was not a fair trial at all.
I think that they want to publicly go through the machinations of a process, a judicial process, so that their international representatives, when they come to the United Nations, can say, see, we put them through a rigorous trial, and our judicial agencies are independent from the executive offices, and we have a robust and democratic society, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Do you think, though, that they really believed the things that they were saying that you did, or that they were just making it up?
The planners of my arrest and detention obviously knew that I hadn't done anything wrong. My only crime was that I worked for a high-profile American news organization and happened to be an American citizen. The people doing the interrogations, though, on some level had to believe that I was guilty of something.
What do you think that they wanted out of keeping you in prison, or what did they want for your release?
They were looking for political concessions from the very start. Iran has been taking prisoners, hostages, for 40 years and using them to extract concessions from foreign governments, most often the United States. So I see myself as unremarkable in that sense, you know, on this long continuum of U.S. hostages in Iran.
Well, and actually, one of the interesting things is your father ran a Persian rug business in the United States. And after the Iranian hostage crisis, back in the early 80s, when the hostages were released, he sent rugs to the hostages.
My dad had been living in the United States for 20 years at that point. He was a U.S. citizen. He'd never seen anything like this before. So like so many others, he decided to make a gesture. And what he did was offer each one of them $1,000 of credit in his shop. And I've been to the home of one of the former hostages just outside of D.C. 3 or 4 times. And every time I come over, he's a wonderful gentleman. And he, you know, flips over the corner of the rug where it's got my dad's label on it and says, "Your dad gave me this 40 years ago."
You're talking to us about this. I'm presuming that nobody in this room has spent time in an Iranian jail. I could be wrong.
You never know. There's way more of us than you think.
But is there anybody, once you're out, that you can talk to about your experience and they'll understand what you've been through?
There are. A couple of the hostages from the embassy I talked to, other journalists who've been held in Iran. David Rode, the former New York Times correspondent who was taken by the Taliban and is now an editor at The New Yorker, has been an incredible advocate and friend of mine. I spoke to him for the first time about 2 months after I was released, and it was after that conversation that I had my first decent night of sleep in freedom, because I realized that I wasn't the first person to go through this and that other people had survived.
It's also clear that it meant a great deal to you, and I think it's worth remembering it for those of us who care about journalism in this country. It meant a lot to you when people at the Washington Post remembered that you were there, brought it up every time they had a chance with an Iranian official, brought it up with American officials.
It still does. It makes it a lot easier to go back to work knowing that your colleagues, your employers, never forgot about you. I mean, the Post was incredible, but the Post as an institution has a long history of being incredibly supportive of its staff, and in the aftermath have continued to be so supportive, giving me space to recover, to write my book, and have given me the opportunity to come back to work and write about the things that, for better or worse, I know about. So I end up writing a lot about Iran and press freedom issues.
Do you think that the Obama administration did enough to get you out of prison?
So,
because you don't thank President Obama in your acknowledgments, but you do thank a lot of other people.
Did I not thank him?
No.
So I've had the opportunity to meet President Obama a couple of times, and we've talked about all of this, and a lot of folks in his administration apologized to me for it taking so long. I think the reality is I should not have been arrested in the first place, that there might have been possibilities to bring me home earlier, but the administration decided very early on to separate out these negotiations. If the negotiations over myself and other Americans being held in Iran were taking place in the same room as the nuclear negotiations, it would have made it very difficult to get a deal. So what happened, and I recount this in the book in pretty good detail, is a separate channel of secret negotiations that were going on for 14 months. You know, there were a lot of people, opponents of the nuclear deal in 2015, who used my imprisonment and the imprisonment of other Americans in Iran as a reason why Obama should not do a deal. One of them is now our Secretary of State. These very same people, in the run-up to Trump pulling out of the nuclear deal last year, were and continue to be silent on Americans who are still imprisoned there. So I end up writing about Americans that are imprisoned in Iran all the time, because if I don't do it, I don't know who else will. And I'm thankful to the Obama administration for making my return, if not the priority, a priority.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask you one more thing, which is, you are back at the Washington Post. You're still doing journalism. What did all of this make you think about the importance of the work that you were doing that got you in there in the first place and that you're still doing now?
It's made me double down, right? I worked and lived in a society that was run by authoritarians, and I wasn't able to necessarily write and say what I wanted to all the time. Now I can. And I take that privilege very seriously. I worry about the state of press freedom in this country all the time, but I think that our institutions, especially in terms of expression, are on pretty solid ground. And I'm just excited to keep pushing forward.
Jason, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Jason Rezaian of The Washington Post speaking with me earlier this week at the John F. Kennedy Library in Boston. Rezaian spent 544 days in an Iranian prison. His book about it is called Prisoner.